We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
Border Patrol is presented by Walker Medical Linen Services, locally owned and operated, and HLAC certified, meeting the highest industry standards. Walker has partnerships with hospitals, surgery centers, and medical clinics in and around the metro area. Walker Medical Linen Services in Kansas City and online at walkermls.com.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. It's Wednesday, March 29, 2023. Stephen St. John and Nate Ducati with Marco Marquez. Nate Ducati, please introduce our next guest.
First of all, shout out to Marco for this song. This is my friend Tyler Tice's favorite song of all time, Return of the Mac, although it's a little inappropriate because this is not a return of Dr. Daniel Mac. This is the first time he's ever been on our show, I believe. So, but I appreciated the music there, intro there for Dr. Daniel Mack from the Kansas City Royals. Good morning, Dr. Mack. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. How are you guys?
Is that is that one of your favorite songs? Do you feel like that's like your theme songs, kind of?
I would say starting in about seventh grade, it got played a lot, so I'd have to take some credit for it at this point.
Right. Hey, there was no other song that was going to be played for you on this show, and of course, you're the vice president, assistant general manager, research and development. You've been with the Royals for over a decade, and you will do this better than us. If you would, to our listeners, please describe your role with the Royals and what your duties are.
Yeah, I oversee a subdepartment in baseball operations, research and development, and really, that's two different parts. Research, where I oversee our analysts that perform research, build tools, create reports for every aspect of baseball operations, scouting, the draft, major league operations. And then the other part of that is development. So that's where we create our internal portal, where we import data. And that's with our software engineers who do as much as they can to put all of baseball operations in the best spot to succeed.
Okay, so I'm sure you've been asked this before, but I think this is very interesting because I have a son that's in business school right now, and he looks ahead to what he wants to do, and he's talked about perhaps wanting to work for a professional sports franchise. But if there is someone out there that looks at your role and looks at your job and says, you know what, yes, that's what I would like to do, what advice do you give them? What path do they follow as far as their education and trying to work their way up the ladder to where you are?
Well, I think it starts with understanding how much they really enjoy, obviously, baseball in its completeness, not just what's playing out on the field, but, like I said, starting with the draft and player development and pro scouting and trades. But I think in terms of skills that it takes to get into the door for research and development department and to work your way up, it helps to take classes that involve programming. I could throw out a lot of one-letter acronyms out there like R, but it's about trying to do as many like types of analytical classes that involve data mining or data science, getting comfortable with databases, getting comfortable with statistics, knowing when a strong sample is, knowing how to find signal in noisy data. Those are the types of classes that I think I would recommend someone take so that they could put themselves in the best position to apply for an analyst position.
So it's like at what point in your life did you know this is what you wanted to do?
It happened right after I graduated from Notre Dame. I was getting my master's. I was trying to figure out, you know, sort of what the future would hold for me. My parents obviously wanted me to go get a job sooner rather than later, but I was kind of enjoying the opportunity to learn a lot more. And I realized that I needed to find something that I could differentiate myself with. I've loved baseball since I was a child. My mom's father, my grandfather, was extremely passionate about the game. That bled to my mother, her siblings. Baseball was an important part of my childhood. And as I sat there trying to find ways and new projects and new places I could go with computer science, it seemed like this was a new area. And from that point forward, anytime I had a project in class or I had a part of my dissertation to write, I wanted to try and focus in on baseball.
So you're a Notre Dame guy, huh?
That's correct.
Are you like diehard, Fighting Irish fan? We have a few different Notre Dame guys that come on our show on a regular basis. Were you always a Notre Dame guy?
Yep, same side of the family. It was ingrained. I'm always willing to let it wreck a Saturday for me.
We're visiting with Dr. Daniel Mack. All right, so you decided you wanted to go into this. You studied it. Is it everything that you thought it would be? Is it like, how different is the job, or is it exactly what you thought when you decided this is what you wanted to get into?
Well, I think I wasn't sure exactly how information flowed in a large operation. A good example of this is this spring we brought every one of our analysts and every one of our software engineers down for at least a week to kind of see spring training. And I think it's important for that to happen, because when you see the entire operation in one spot, when you see every single coach, every single player, every single person, scouts are coming through, and you understand just what it takes to move the metaphorical mountain to get a team on the field like we will tomorrow, that's what you don't expect. But the parts of it that I was hoping would happen, where it was about trying to find new ways of applying that information, new ways of visualizing it, trying to help, form a collective opinion with JJ and others, like that was what I was hoping for, and it's more than met my expectations.
How much has baseball or the Royals, how much has the acceptance changed since you first started with this job, as far as, the sport coming around to the analytics side? And there's still people that resist it. I'm sure there's still organizations that aren't exactly as forward-thinking as others. And, a lot of former baseball players, have a hard time wrapping their arms around it. But how much has baseball's acceptance changed since you began?
I think it's been a pretty pretty steep acceptance. And the change, and over the last decade, I guess I'd say, it's pretty incredible to look at it. But I think it has a lot more to do with how available the data is, how available the information is to players across all ages. From the moment that high school players, start training in the off season, they start throwing at facilities, and they've got Rapsodo units that they can throw in front of and look at their spin rates, or they're taking BP and they can see how hard the ball's coming off the bat. That's been ingrained in a lot of players that are starting to make it to the major leagues since the time they started in high school. And now it's everywhere. And so I think that acceptance has come along as more players have reached the major leagues and have used that as part of their development process. When I showed up, because there was still, there wasn't data at every single minor league level in terms of that same type of pitch measurement or batted ball measurement, that it wasn't so much that you had to change people's minds, it's that you had to get that data into their hands. And we've really worked hard over the last decade at trying to get it into as many people's hands as possible throughout the organization.
So this might be a dumb question, but because I am fascinated by this, and I that's something that I've always loved about baseball, is that even when I would get bored watching a game, I love reading about baseball. I love the statistics of baseball. And it's just something, and I'm a huge rotisserie baseball nerd too. And it's one of the pastimes that I've had, not just watching it, but reading about it, learning about it, trying to understand the different statistics. But so as a baseball fan, if you could have control of the stats that they put up on the scoreboard at a game that were truly more reflective of a player's ability than the counting stats that we've all been accustomed to over the years, if they said, okay, Dr. Mack, what should we put up there that would really educate fans and make it more interesting for baseball fans and help educate them to a player's true abilities, what stats would you like to see showcased on scoreboards in Major League Baseball stadiums?
Well, I definitely think it starts with WOBA for hitters. And that's weighted on base average. And really, it's taking walks, taking all of the different types of singles, doubles, triples, home runs, but it's putting it on a much more OBP-like scale that ends up weighting walks in a way that I think gives some players more credit when they aren't necessarily going to hit for average. Now, I'll say I think the triple slash itself, average, OBP, and slug, is extremely beneficial to always have up there because I think it puts a lot of things in perspective about how a season is going. But a statistic like WOBA, there's a couple of sub ones like that WRC plus that end up sort of stabilizing a player's skill set a little bit more that I think probably is more representative of why they are important to the team, why they're in the lineup that day, that sometimes get lost because maybe they're only hitting, 215. So that would probably be where I'd start for hitters. And for pitchers, I prefer rate stats. So K percentage, walk percentage. I think those end up also being much more stable. And once you get used to a slightly different scale, because I think a lot of people are used to K per nine, walk per nine, you find that you can really understand what a player brings to the table or a pitcher brings to the table in terms of whether or not they're a command guy, they've got a low walk rate, but maybe they don't strike a ton of guys out, or maybe they're the big boom bust guy, right? They're striking a bunch of guys out, but their walk rate is 16, 17, 18%, and that's pretty high. Those things I think might give fans sort of the gateway into understanding a little bit more about how you can at least start initially understanding the value a player brings to the game and over a season.
I'm feverishly writing down notes trying to,
But I wonder, what do you think, like, if you keep your baseball fan hat on as a guy that understands all these numbers like crazy, how do, even for somebody like me, I've liked baseball my whole life, but I've never been a huge, I'm not a statistician. That's not how my brain's wired. There's a lot to explain, isn't there? Like, every time I see one of these acronyms, I'm like, oh, man, I don't even really know how they calculate that. I can at least tell you how they calculate a batting average. How big of a challenge do you think that is to get the stats that are the most accurate, but make them digestible for the average fan?
Well, I think it starts with making sure that they appear as frequently as possible next to the player, right? There's a reason why you'll refer to certain things as back of the baseball card stats, right? They were always on the back of the baseball card. If you start putting some of these different numbers next to a player's name, if you find ways of being able to turn that into part of the allure of understanding why a player's there, that becomes part of why we talk about why a free agent was signed, why, and that shows up a lot when they're on, Crown Vision or wherever, people will start asking the question, why is that number important? And that's when you can kind of start breaking down the barrier. Obviously, counting statistics are super easy because you can literally be at the ballpark and count how many happened that day and watch that go into that total. But I'd argue that, how many fans know what slugging percentage is without needing to be educated at some point in their life. So if it's slugging, and if I said that WOBA was essentially starting with a very similar type of premise of how it's calculated, I think you could almost swap one out for the other, and over the course of a fan's young life, they will gravitate towards that type of knowledge.
What's the most useless stat that you wish would go away and people would stop referring to?
I think there's a lot of value to a lot of them for how people approach it generationally. So I wouldn't be trying to nuke any one particular stat. For me, pitcher wins probably doesn't factor as much as right. as a lot of other things that the pitcher can accomplish. That's probably the one that comes to mind the most. I know pitchers definitely care a lot about it, but we want to just make sure that they're always put in the best position to accumulate as many of those for themselves. For me, it doesn't matter as much about what kind of pitcher they are.
How do you feel about RBIs?
You know what? I think you see a lot of people from my generation of fandom on that still want to go back to it. Once again, I'm not sure that I'm going to use it in terms of understanding what that player will bring to our team going forward. But it's important to indicate how valuable they were probably in that season at trying to drive in runs. So, you know, I think I wouldn't want to take that away from any one person because I want everyone to enjoy watching the game of baseball. I just know that for me, it's probably not something I'm going to bet on for that player in the future.
Okay, we're visiting with Dr. Daniel Mack, Vice President, Assistant General Manager of Research and Development for the Kansas City Royals. Can I give you a statistic in baseball that I would like to nuke, and you tell me what you think?
Yeah, sure.
The whole concept of the earned run and errors in general, it's the dumbest concept we have in baseball. We actually have a guy that gets, or a person who gets paid crap money, first of all, to sit in a press box and judge whether or not a defender should have made the play, as if it's binary, first of all, as if it's either a hit or it's an error. It either should have been made or it shouldn't have been made, not counting in the degree of difficulty. And then we have an entire statistic based off of the concept that, well, that play, we're just going to act like it did happen. So if a guy makes an error, an error with two outs, and then the pitcher gives up seven home runs in a row after that, well, those didn't really count because it should have been, the inning should have been over. I just think the whole concept is the most, it's when you step back and look at it, it's the dumbest thing in the world to me. Why don't we nuke that? Do you agree with that, or am I all wet?
Well, I definitely think sometimes it, going back to how do you introduce new statistics into the game, I definitely think it's pretty hard to explain to an 8-year-old kid why an error happened in the field sometimes. Sometimes it's pretty straightforward, but sometimes it can get a little complicated. One of the fascinating parts about the earned run is it ends up having sort of a historical impact on how a lot of information is presented. You'll see a ton of ways in which pitchers' contributions in the field must be put on the ERA scale because of the earned run. So I think that's also pretty interesting. The one thing I will say about that is it's also when you kind of get to, you know, be a part of baseball operations and sort of watch this from a slightly different side of the field, it's interesting to watch teams argue after the fact whether or not something was an error or not in order to move the earned run around on the field.
Yeah.
I think that's probably more interesting. If nothing else, you almost wish that could probably be a little more known to the public, that we're going to try and say this guy didn't actually commit an error, would rather have the pitcher earn that run and, you know, move the error off of that player's counting stats at the end of the season. I think that's almost more fascinating and probably pretty good representative of baseball in general, that you can have that kind of conversation with the league about the scoring of the game.
We're speaking with Dr. Daniel Mack. What about defensive metrics and how that's evolved and how we able to evaluate the effectiveness of a player's defensive abilities? Because I've seen a lot of debates and discussions where the defensive metrics that are sometimes used don't always match up with the eyeball test. I'm just curious how you feel about how effective those defensive metrics are, or if there's a certain statistic or metric that you think is more effective than others when trying to grade someone defensively.
Well, that's probably one of the other things over the last 10 years that's grown a lot, which is a better understanding of what a defensive contribution looks like out in the field. I think probably 10 years ago, some of the measures, UZR and others, were showing value in terms of players that we constantly thought might be above average defenders showing up at the top of lists. But there was a lot of variability. It would change so often from season to season that it was sometimes hard to really understand if it was the player or if it was the way the stat was being calculated. Now, with StatCast, with player tracking that's happening not just at the major league level but in the minors, we have a lot better understanding of where the player was when the ball was hit, the route they took, you know, especially for outfielders, to give us a better understanding of their actual range. And I think one of the things that we've seen internally is that we always need to give a little bit of a paper trail, right? You can't just say, well, we think this player is an above-average defender. You want to show what his best plays were, what his worst plays were, and you want to be able to kind of go to any one play and say, we thought this was a better-than-average catch. Sometimes when you're watching on television, it's hard because the camera cuts, and so you never actually get to see what the player did in that first jump, and you miss out on all of the, like, where all of the talent really was, which was the great instincts that Lorenzo Cain has or other center fielders. Then the camera cuts, they make the easy catch, and you're like, oh, that was easy.
I think we may have
really
lost
what makes the.
Go ahead. You dropped there for a little bit just after you said, though, that was really easy. So I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry about that. Just that essentially when you watch the game in person, you'll end up seeing that they made that play. That's what really separated, you know, really is what separates them. And I think those defensive metrics are going to gain more steam over time. And hopefully that will make fielding percentage based off of errors and outs converted, you know, less important to the casual fan.
And I know the position isn't as important as center field or shortstop defensively, but I just, like, when Eric Hosmer was here, we would hear people rave about him in and out of the organization. Say, boy, this is one of the best defensive first basemen we've ever seen. And then the defensive metrics were not kind to him at all. And that was always the example of it seems like people couldn't get on the same page of evaluating him as a defensive first baseman.
Right, and I think that's what we hope that even on in now when you take that those defensive concepts of range or how their arm works or how well they help contribute to creating the out on the infield, you can better put Eric Hosmer in context rather than trying to kind of have that subjective argument back and forth.
Okay, so I've written this. So WOBA, WRC plus as far as for hitters. And tell me again, because this is going to be something that's going to be very interesting to watch, especially with this new regime, because you know as well as everyone that the Royals' fortunes could turn on the development of these young pitchers and developing starting pitching and seeing some of these guys break out similar to what Brady Singer did. Again, tell me again, what are the most useful stats when fans are trying to dig deeper and judge the effectiveness of a pitcher?
Sure. So, like I said, I think I kind of initially go to rate-based stats for strikeouts and walks, which is number of strikeouts divided by the total number of batters that they face. I think those kind of stabilize a little bit what their contributions are in terms of two things that they really get to control, striking out hitters and not putting guys on base through the walk. Those get combined with a couple other items to create values like FIP. FIP goes back to what I was talking about in terms of putting things on an earned run scale. It looks like an ERA. And when you put strikeout rate, walk rate, and FIP out there next to what their actual, you know, what their calculated ERA is, you can understand sometimes if a pitcher has been a little bit unlucky, maybe they're outperforming. And that, I think, when you see the difference there, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to always regress. Sometimes that's a credit to the defense. And because that's the one thing the pitcher can't control. And FIP, field independent pitching, which is what that number is called, tries to strip as much of that away to focus on what the pitcher is actually contributing to creating outs and preventing runs from scoring.
My last question for you is one of the things that always kind of strikes me when I read there's a lot of I don't know what you want to call it, armchair analytics people out there these days, right? Guys that write blogs or that just love the game of baseball and study the numbers. And I feel like there's a pretty big groupthink mentality about that a lot of times. And I'll see the phrase, well, the analytics say X or the analytics say Y. And if you don't all agree on that, then you don't understand analytics or you're not in the conversation. And I guess my question for you is, with all of the numbers that you have at your disposal and all this different information, do people, you're in the actual analytics community, is there usually a consensus, or do you guys come to different conclusions sometimes based on how you look at all the numbers that are in front of you?
I think, well, there's a lot of information that, because especially over the last decade and change, a lot of this information, a lot of data has been captured. I think a lot of people are coming to similar conclusions, but it's a two-part thing. One of them is analytics doesn't tell you what to do. It gives you a pretty good idea of what a possible optimal solution or choice is. But baseball, because of its tremendous amount of randomness, you want to try and do that as many times throughout a season. But in a game, the best choice can always backfire with almost as much chance as a bad decision. But the analytics community, I think, should really try and embrace one of the more interesting parts about it, which is you can have very similar thoughts, but just enough difference in the precision of what you believe the decision should be, that you can find yourself on slightly different sides of the argument. And one of the things that I think myself and others should always be trying to do is remain skeptical even about some of the things that we create, because that's the only way to continue to innovate and evolve over time.
Our guest has been Dr. Daniel Mack. Hey, we would love to have you on the show again sometime in the future. I could ask you questions for 2 hours, but I think it's fascinating, and we appreciate you being on the show. And good luck with opening day tomorrow, and hopefully we can talk again soon.
Thank you very much, guys. I appreciated it.
That is Dr. Daniel Mack, again, Vice President, Assistant General Manager of Research and Development with the Kansas City Royals. So,
pretty interesting stuff.
Oh, this is going to go straight to my rotisserie research. WOBA. You just to try to trade me someone. What's their WOBA?
Right.
Not good enough. Screw you, buddy. I love it.
K rate, walk rate, field independent pitching.
I could have talked to him all day.
Heck yeah.
Marco, what do you think of that?
I missed it. I was talking to the doctor.
Oh, good. No, I just know the whole deal.
So, like, I would point out, you know, Dr. Daniel Mack, as you pointed out, he's been there for a while.
Yeah.
I just wonder, does he have a louder voice in the room now?
Why aren't you asking that?
Well, I don't know. Well, you know, we hopefully have him on again. We can ask him that. But you know what I mean? Like, it's more, or is,
I think
he,
so,
is
yes.
he heard more?
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
I mean, did Mike Matheny go, okay, hey, thanks for these numbers,
yes.
then throw him in the trash can?
No. What did Matheny have?
He had a spreadsheet.
Yeah.
Excel, baby.
Yeah, baby. We will.
I thought Daniel Mack probably has more than a couple spreadsheets.
Right. We'll be back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you so much for joining us. Stephen St. John and Nate Buchady with Marco Marquez. Thank you to Dr. Daniel Mack from the Kansas City Royals, who's on the show. Now we'll talk to Annie Rogers from MLB.com, also about the Royals. Annie, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good. Glad to be back in Kansas City.
Yeah, I bet. How was the? Do you enjoy the new? Do you enjoy the new airport?
I love it. It's awesome. Although it's a very long, it was a very long walk to baggage claim yesterday, but everything else is great.
So, of course, tomorrow is opening day, and now we have some clarity on the roster. First up, we'll talk about the rotation. Chris Bubich gets the nod for the fifth starter. He was in a competition with Daniel Lynch, but Daniel Lynch is physically not able to perform. But Bubich did have a good outing with six strikeouts his last time out. So tell us about that decision to make Bubich the fifth starter.
Yeah, it was expected just because of, like you said, Daniel Lynch being out with an injury. I'm interested to see when he does come back kind of what the Royals do, but sometimes those things just take care of themselves throughout the course of the season. But Chris had a great spring. He was delayed a little bit, so he's not quite as built up as maybe some of the other guys, but he had a really good spring, a lot of focus on his slider, getting a lot more swing and miss with that pitch and then his other pitches as well because of it. So that's really good to see because he's a guy at times who struggled with that. You gotta have that aspect in your game. So we've talked a lot about that, but he gets the nod, and it should be interesting to see him kind of kick off his 2023 season.
Okay. Also, we know more about the bench now. The Royals informed non-roster invitees Matt Duffy and Jackie Bradley Jr. that they're going to make the opening day roster. So is Franmil Reyes and Edward Olivares and utility man Nate Eaton. And so if you don't mind, and so those are five players I'm interested in just to get your thoughts on and what their roles will be. Let's start with the outfield. You've got, Jackie Bradley Jr., known for his defense. Franmil Reyes is not. Edward Olivares is still a guy that's trying to carve out a role here with the Royals. And then you got Nate Eaton, who can play all over the diamond. How do you expect this playing time in the outfield to be divvied up?
Well, I think your everyday guys are probably going to be MJ Melendez out there in right field and Kyle Isbell in center. And then I think you can kind of mix and match. Edward Olivares and Jackie Bradley Jr. can maybe platoon a little bit over there in left field. Jackie can also play center field, obviously, when Kyle needs a day off. So that's kind of how I see that. I think Nate Eaton will also get some time out there, too. But he's going to be, like you said, all over the diamond because of his versatility. He can just play anywhere. So we've seen him at third a lot this spring. We've seen him at second. We've seen him out in the outfield. Pretty sure he'd be fine with pitching, too. That's the way this guy plays. So that's kind of his role. Matt Duffy is infield depth, too. He can play third, short, second. I imagine he might come in maybe, late in games along with Nicky Lopez for defensive replacement, something like that, help them win some games that way. So that's kind of what it's shaping up to be. And Franmil Reyes is going to make the team, too, and he'll likely be just a DH guy, but also will probably play a little bit of left field. Let's say Salvi's DHing that day. Franmil will head out there in the outfield. He's gotten some reps out there this spring.
What was that unique defensive alignment in the outfield featuring Franmil Reyes that you tweeted out about yesterday?
Yeah, it was actually the first time I've noticed it, but they've done it a little bit this spring. They brought in the right fielder, which in this case was Franmil, and they had him play basically like that shifted second baseman role that we would have seen last year out in shallow right field. And they almost got Jonah Heim out at first base. Franmil bobbled the ball, and Dozier wasn't quite as quick getting over to first base, but I imagine that's what they want to do with that. And I talked to Q Quintero a little bit about it last night, and he was talking about how it's a very small bucket of players that they'll do that with, but it will be something that they want to try to do because they're trying to take advantage of within the rules that they have now.
Yeah, I think that's going to be fascinating, isn't it? In terms of like the way the outlawing of the shift affects defenses going forward. I mean, I was listening to a lot of the announcers during the World Baseball Classic talking about, well, that one would have been a base hit in today's Major League Baseball because they wouldn't have been able to shift over there. But you can take an outfielder and put him on the infield. So that part is not outlawed right now?
No, you can't. You can't put him on the infield. You can put him in shallow right field, though. He can still be on the grass. So you can bring him up. And what the Royals did yesterday was they shifted over the center fielder to, like, right center, and then they shifted the left fielder over to, like, left center. So there's a wide gap out there in left field, but for these left-handed batters who are probably going to, you know, pull the ball, and maybe, you know, if, even if they do go the opposite way, they won't. It won't be an automatic triple because they're just not fast. This is something that the Royals and other teams are going to look at doing. So you can't bring an outfielder in, but you can shift the outfield any way you want.
We have Andy Rogers on the line. Any surprises about who was able to make the roster in the bullpen?
Not really. You know, the Royals are committing to Dylan Coleman there, so that was interesting to me just because he struggled a little bit with command this spring, but they wanted to reward him for his year last year, and so they're going to commit to him at least at the early part of the season. And that last spot appears to be Jose Quas, who didn't have a, you know, great spring, but he was also working on a lot of different things. I mean, and the coaches really love the way he throws the ball and kind of that look that he brings. So he appears to earn that spot, that last spot. And then the way that the rest of it all shakes out is Ryan Yarbrough, Carlos Hernandez is going to be their long inning guys. Taylor Clark can go 2+ innings. And then you've got the back end of the bullpen and Scott Barlow, Aroldis Chapman, and they're going to give Coleman some of those opportunities as well.
Brady Singer looked good in his final tune-up of the spring. He went 5 innings. He threw 68 pitches. I know there's some concern that he won't be fully built up when the regular season starts. I know he's scheduled to go fourth in the rotation, but that was a positive sign. 5 innings and 68 pitches, and he looked very good.
Yeah, absolutely. I think everyone is a little bit surprised at how built up he is after those lack of innings at WBC. But he says he feels good. He was really efficient yesterday, and you know, he had like 9 or 10 pitch innings most of the time. They made him work for a little bit later on in the outing, but he was really efficient. That's what you can ask for. So the fact that he did 5 innings, he got that 6 up too. Went out there for the 6th and had 1 batter. That was really encouraging, and I think you're looking at his first start of the season is probably going to be, you know, 6 innings or, you know, probably right around 85 pitches.
We're visiting with Andy Rogers, and Andy, I think one of the things, I guess the biggest thing I'm going to be interested to see this year is just overall how the pitching is affected by the new pitching department and the pitching coaches. And I told Steven, one of the guys that I'm most intrigued about is Chris Bubich. I was actually trying to look back through the interviews I'd saved on my phone from last year. There was a day that I was out at Kauffman Stadium, and Bubich had a terrible outing. I can't remember. It was one of those ones that you know, it didn't last very long. He didn't get very deep into the game. And Mike Matheny had been basically pretty openly critical, like, you can't stay in the big leagues much longer if you're going to pitch like this. And you were there. Some of the other reporters were there, I remember. And I just remember we went and asked him, and I'm wondering if your memory is better than mine, but it was one of those moments when he sounded exasperated with, like, what the answers were to why he was struggling. And I can't remember exactly what he said, but I feel like it was some stuff like, well, I'm doing what they're telling me to do here, and it's not working. And that was one of those moments where I thought, man, this guy seems lost, and I don't think he has a lot of confidence that the current regime is giving him the answers that he needs to get better. Do you remember that at all? Like, do you remember that interaction from when he'd had some really bad outing and just seemed like he was kind of at the end of his ideas?
I mean, I don't remember the specific game because there were, quite frankly, a lot of games like that.
Yeah.
There was a lot of frustration last year. You know, there was just, and exasperation is a great word for it, and I'm not going to put words into anybody's mouth, but from what I gathered in the clubhouse last year, it was frustration, and it was kind of just like, you know, they're searching for answers, and they couldn't find any. I think there was a, you know, I talked a lot this spring just about the vibes of the pitching staff and the confidence that I hear these guys talk with, I have not heard in the last, you know, three seasons that I've covered this team. And it's really encouraging. Now, of course, you have to show that on the field. We'll see that real soon, right?
Right.
But hearing them talk about all these new pitches that they're adding is just kind of like a breath of fresh air, really. We're talking about pitch design. We're talking about adding pitches because that's what you have to do at the major league level. You have to get better every year. And the way you do that is evaluating your stuff and seeing what you can add or what you can improve on. And that's what they did this spring.
Andy Rogers is our guest. What's going to be the game plan at catcher? And how often do you think Salvi is going to catch every week?
Yeah, I think he'll get the majority of starts out there, like always. I'd imagine MJ Melendez is going to get maybe one or two, maybe up to three, depending on the schedule of games every week. But Salvi is that main guy, and MJ's the backup, and then they'll have him play outfield when he's not catching. So that's how it goes, and I think, you know, they're kind of, you can kind of foresee maybe, you know, injuries that might shake up the schedule, that sort of thing. And then we might see, you know, Freddie Freeman come up a couple times this year just to help out with some of that load. So that's kind of how they're looking at it now, but it's not a set, like, number of days that they're saying Salvi has to catch this much, MJ has to catch this much.
How strong of a consideration was there, do you think, to going with three catchers?
I think there was. It was something we talked about pretty much all spring, was kind of this idea of having three catchers. The Royals did it last year. They liked having that kind of, if they got caught in a bind, you know, here's the third catcher off the bench. But I think just the way that they want their bench to be this year, they really want to utilize it more. These guys are going to play a lot from what I've gathered from Quintero. So I think they just wanted to have some more, you know, versatility both offensively and defensively on that bench this year to at least start the year.
So that any other things that you maybe have gleaned from Quintero that you think maybe will stand out to us this year that show the fans, like, hey, this is different than what they've seen in the past?
I think the biggest thing is the bench. Like I said, he's going to utilize it. So there are going to be everyday guys, of course, and you guys know those guys, but he's going to utilize the bench. It's not going to be the same lineup every day. And I think that's a good thing. You're kind of projecting what each guy can do against that starter, and you look at the bullpen that you're going to face, and you put the best guys in that you can based on the projections and the other context that they look at. So that's going to be, I think, a big difference. The other thing is just kind of that roster turnover, not in the sense of trades and, you know, whatnot, but just using the entire 40-man roster and all of the options that these guys have. I think every pitcher has at least one option remaining, and that's a really good thing for the Royals because they're going to utilize this 40-man. They're going to bring guys up, send guys down. All of the guys that were sent down in spring, they were sent down with the message that you're going to help. You're going to be in Kansas City at some point this year. You just have to get ready for that opportunity because there will be opportunities, and I think that's going to be a big thing. The Royals used a lot of pitchers last year, but it was more out of injury, need, you know, necessity, that sort of thing. This year it's going to be a lot about matchups, taking advantage of, you know, bringing guys up for certain series and you know, having them face the hitters and looking at kind of that projection based on each series.
Andy Rogers has been our guest. I know Nicky Lopez is still going to have a prominent role on this team, but Michael Massey did a nice job of going out there and establishing himself as the second baseman, and it seems like, you know, winning that job. What did you think of his spring?
Yeah, really good spring. Impressive the power. He's always kind of had that raw power, you know, in the minor leagues, and last year's small sample size showed it too. But even the balls that he's not, you know, hitting out of the park, which, you know, I don't think he's ever trying to hit those balls out of the park, but he's just really strong, and he hits balls really hard. Strong exit velocities, and I think that's really important. You know, the Royals really like that about him, and he's improving his defense as well. So, you know, I think he's earned this spot. He'll get a chance to show people what he's got, and then Nicky will come in as needed. He'll move around the diamond, kind of in that versatile role that he's known for, because he is really valuable on defense.
Okay, final question for you, and this in no way has anything to do with my rotisserie baseball team, so just put that out of your mind.
Which means that it has everything to do with his rotisserie baseball team.
Your bold prediction when I was reading one of your recent columns at MLB.com was Dylan Coleman will emerge as a closer. Do you think that because you believe Barlow will be traded, or do you think he could emerge as a closer with Barlow still on the roster?
Yes, to both. If the Royals, the Royals are they are going to be looking at trading Scott Barlow, because he's going to bring in a solid, package for them if that's the way the season shakes out. So I think that's, that definitely went into that prediction. And then I think, the Royals really do need, Coleman to step up, become that guy, because he's got such nasty stuff. And you're looking down at the future bullpen, and if you don't have Scott Barlow, Amir Garrett's a free agent by the end of the year, Aroldis Chapman's a free agent, and obviously if the Royals are out of contention, they'll try to trade him and maybe Garrett too. So I think you're looking at kind of a up in the air bullpen, and I think Coleman establishing himself as someone they can really rely on, they really need that. And he has the stuff to do that. It's just a matter of fixing his, ironing out his command.
All right, noted. Welcome home, Andy. We appreciate your time, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you later.
That is Andy Rogers from MLB.com. Unbelievable. Marco, I research, when we're going to have guests, and I try to come up with good questions. I ask a pretty good question of Dr. Daniel Mack, and then I got Nate on social media taking credit for it. Unbelievable.
I don't know how we can remember who asked it. I feel like I might have asked that question.
I just hear great questions all day, so.
Is that right?
I know I'm not the one asking them, because I'm listening.
Now,
iPad in the yard.
To be accurate, I gave you credit because I was mistakenly given credit.
Hear
that?
For
that
he gave it to you.
I gave you the credit.
I love you, Royals Review. Don't you love me back?
I threw rose petals at your feet.
Do we need to call up Max Reaper?
No.
Talk to him.
I enjoy them as well.
I like the fact that I got
tremendous
credit for
content.
The question, though.
Well,
I got to puff my chest. Yeah, I did ask a good question. Wait a second. That wasn't my question. That was Steven. It was a good question. I like hearing that.
Somebody just said, because now they pose, what stats. Someone said career earnings. That'd be a pretty good one.
I would like to see that, yeah.
No, but I do think, if we're going to try to bring fans into 2023 when it comes to evaluating players, put the right stats up there.
Yeah, let's start talking about stats that actually matter.
And people get mad for a little bit, but they'll get used to it.
Use that big-ass scoreboard to its advantage.
Right. Educate the fans, Help them understand the best way to evaluate players.
When they used to have Rusty do his outfield coaching
Rusty
lessons.
Kuntz, yeah.
Remember what he used to have? He used to do stuff like that on the video board. He'd have his lesson of the day.
Marco just likes the hat game. He tries to figure out, which hat is it? I don't know.
Right.
The hat on the left. We'll take a break back after this on WHB. You listen to Sports Radio 810 all week long for your chance to win tickets to Sports Radio 810's Night at B&B Theaters and the release of Air, which chronicles the rise of Nike. Starring Matt Damon. Ben Affleck's in it, too. Looks like a fantastic movie. And we're going to have a private screening of Air at B&B Theaters on Wednesday, April 5th at 7:30 p.m. B&B Theaters enjoy the way movies are meant to be seen on the big screen. The family-owned and operated movie theater company that operates a cinema location not far from you with nearly a dozen locations across the KC Metro. B&B Theaters, the big screen is back. If you want a family four-pack of tickets to go see Air on Wednesday, April 5th at B&B Theaters, be caller number 10 at 913-3810-810, 913-3810-810. Call number 10 and get the 4 bag of tickets to go see the private screening of Air at B&B Theaters on Wednesday, April 5th at 7:30 p.m. Have a great day on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
The Border Patrol has been brought to you by Walker Medical Linen Services, setting the standard in healthcare laundry services for hospitals, surgery centers, and medical clinics in Kansas City. Walker Medical Linen delivers laundry you can depend on. HLAC certified to the highest standards. It's Walker Medical Linen Services, online at walkermls.com.
Bye-bye.